1 Peter 5, I'm going to speak about shepherding the flock this morning. I'll be a little teachy this morning, I hope you don't mind, as we talk about elders in the local church and talk about how elders, leaders of the church, are supposed to model the good shepherd, model what Jesus looks like in our lives and to the church. What we're going to look at, the passage we look at this morning, I think it's a small window, but you can see a lot when you look through it. You know, you ever walk up to a door, you open a door, and you kind of, you know, it's a small door, but you can see a lot of the room, you know, just looking through. So it is with a passage like this. It's not, you're only talking about five verses, but they're five really full verses that give us an idea of what elders in a local church look like. As always, I make a qualification like this one. I realize that when you talk about church leadership and how people do church, there are other churches that love Jesus, believe this with my whole heart. They practice leadership differently than we do at Ridgefield Baptist Church, and no problem at all, right? I consider them grateful for our brothers and sisters in Christ. But I am going to try to talk about what this passage says and what it means to us here at Ridgefield Baptist Church. So let me read the text, and then we'll start with a very simple proposition. Verse 1, 1 Peter 5. To the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's sufferings, and one who will share in the glory to be revealed. Be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, serving as overseers, not because you must, but because you are willing. And God wants you to be not greedy for money, but eager to serve. Not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive a crown of glory that will never fade away. Young men, in the same way, be submissive to those who are older. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another, because God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. You think about the book of 1 Peter, here's maybe a proposition we can put before us. God-centered elders are essential for the health of the church and the advancement of the gospel. God-centered elders are essential for the health of the church and advancement of the gospel. And when I say God-centered elders, I'm not even primarily thinking about what we call the pastor here at Ridgefield Baptist Church. I am an elder, one of a community of elders, a team of elders. But I specifically have in mind lay elders. Those that are from the congregation that serve as elders and leaders in the church. I think Peter primarily has lay elders in mind, even opposed to vocational elders like myself. There are so many things that are essential to the health of the church and essential to the advancement of the gospel. We could talk about deacons. You know, early in the book of Acts, when the church begins to grow, we have all kinds of problems in the church, the squabbling over who's going to get what kind of benevolence, and the church has to create deacons in order to solve that problem. Deacons are essential to the health and the life of a church. We could talk about families. Peter, early on in the book, chapter 3, talked about the importance of God-centered families. We could talk about a lot of things, but Peter here brings out specifically elders. Remember, the book of 1 Peter is this. How does the church live by faith in a secular world? How does the church grow, even when it's surrounded by a community that doesn't necessarily believe the gospel? How do we conduct ourselves, and how do we thrive and see the church grow in what Peter calls a fiery trial? Chapter 4 is about trials that come into the church. Peter could have said anything in chapter 5. He could have said, chapter 4, there are all kinds of trials coming into the church, therefore, we ought to have a really strong singles ministry. Does that, by the way, in 1 Corinthians 7. That's another passage. Or he could say, therefore, you need a really strong youth program. Maybe we need really strong families. We need deacons to step up in service. He could have said anything, but he focuses here right after fiery trials. Peter talks about the importance of elders in a local church. God-centered elders are essential to the health of the church and the advancement of the gospel. I would put it this way. I think the church, according to what Peter's doing here, Peter is saying that a church will only be as healthy as it is in developing elders, developing leadership. And without that, we're going to hit a glass ceiling. You know what a glass ceiling is, right? A glass ceiling is that hidden barrier. You can't really see it, but you're not going to be able to climb any higher. Peter seems to be saying that when the fiery trials are in the church and the church is on mission and the church wants to grow, there is a glass ceiling in place that we need elders in the church to break. It's important to have elders. So he says this, shepherd the flock. I think the most important point we could make is not about elders in the church. It's actually about the elder in the church, the good shepherd, and that is Jesus Christ. And Peter actually does that in this passage. I'm not going to say too much about this, but I want to set the stage. There's a reason, Peter says in verse 4, that Jesus is the chief shepherd that appears. So everything we're going to say today in relation to elders in a local church are a mere reflection of the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ. I'm not a scientist, but I'm told that the moon does not have any light or glory of its own. It kind of reflects the glory and the light of the sun. And so elders in a local church are only healthy to the extent that they're looking to the chief shepherd. Jesus is that model for us, and we want to remember that as we look through this. So let me give you several ways here that elders shepherd in a local church. And I'll be a little teachy today, but I think it's important for us at Ridgefield Baptist to have a good biblical healthy view of leadership in a local church. And the first one is this. Elders ought to shepherd confidently. If there's one thing we learn from this passage, it's this. The people of God, you, me, all of us need shepherds in a local church. Peter here gives us a picture of the necessity of leadership and shepherds in a local church. And it's so obvious that we may miss it. Has it ever occurred to you that Peter could have used any illustration here he wanted? I mean, it's almost comical. He could have said, you are like a pack of lions. You know, he could have used that. You know, you're like a pack of lions. And maybe if he said that, he might say you're intimidating. You know, people look at you and they see what power you have. But he doesn't use that picture, does he? He could have said, you're like a pack of coyotes. You're good at team effort, you know, something like that. You're like a school of fish. You feel secure together. You're like a colony of ants. He could have done anything. You're like a flock of birds. You know how to navigate together through the... I don't know, you know? But Peter here uses a very unusual illustration. He says, you're like a flock of sheep, which could be the most unflattering picture he could come up with. Because sheep are the one group that actually need oversight. There's no such thing as a shepherd of lions. You know what the shepherd of lions is called? Yeah, lion food, you know? You don't lead a school of fish. They don't need a shepherd. But sheep need a shepherd. There's a reason that Peter goes after this little picture on purpose. Of course, it's the least flattering description anybody could come up with, but it's a theme in Scripture. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Ezekiel 34 talks about how the leaders are shepherds not feeding the sheep. John 10, Jesus is our good shepherd. Luke 15 tells us there is one sheep that went astray. Jesus pursued that. Can you see why Paul says all we like sheep have gone astray? He uses the same picture. This is a group that desperately needs faithful shepherds. We could talk a lot about sheep. And someday, maybe next year, we'll do the 23rd Psalm and really get into what a shepherd looks like. But you know, animals generally have a pretty good sense of direction. I read this week that there was a dog, it was on a BBC article, a dog that found its way home 240 miles away. That blows my mind, that a dog could navigate the woods and the streets and make it all the way home 240 miles. Do you know that a sheep can get lost less than a half mile from its pen? It can walk in endless circles. And once it starts walking in a certain direction, this is the worst part, it starts to get confident that it's in the right direction, and it starts to walk even more aggressively. Does that not kind of describe people in a way? Oh, we like sheep have gone astray. They're helpless to find water and food on their own. And what Peter is communicating is that sheep are a very vulnerable animal. Very vulnerable. I read this week about something they call the Judas sheep. They use this phrase apparently in New Zealand. A Judas sheep is a male sheep that unwillingly leads the masses to the slaughterhouse. They find one, they kind of coach him along the way. All the other sheep begin to follow confidently right into the slaughterhouse. There's a reason the Bible talks about false kinds of shepherds. That's why Romans 16 says that false shepherds, get this language, deceive the heart of the simple. That word simple is a Greek word that means naive. Sheep need constant protection and constant leadership. They're always hungry. They're always thirsty. Sheep have to have perfect conditions, we're told, to even eat and drink. They're vulnerable. They have to have clean water. Shepherds tell us that if the water is running too rapidly, your dog will go down and lick from the water. The sheep will not. And yet sheep will not drink the stagnant water either. It has to be perfect, where the river and the water is flowing just at a right pace to make them calm enough to dip down and drink. Is there not a reason that we hear, "He leadeth me by the still waters"? Animals can smell water at a distance. Sheep cannot. In fact, we're told that sheep will devour their own pasture, and rather than moving on, they'll sit there and start eating the dirt. Shepherd has to move them along the way. They don't distinguish between dangerous foods. Out in the wild, coyotes and other animals can often distinguish what is a poisonous thing to eat, what is healthy for my body, what is unhealthy, and they can adapt. Sheep will not. The shepherds tell us that sheep will eat a dangerous weed just like it will oats. And sheep are pretty dirty animals too. Shepherds have to shear them. They have this oily skin. We think about sheep. We think about a really cute kind of lamby kind of thing you do with your kids. Their wool continues to grow. Oil gets all over the wool. And grass and seeds and sticks start sticking to it. They don't even know how to clean themselves. They're not like a cat, a dog, or a bird. Sheep are vulnerable to disease. We know that sheep, flies love to lay eggs on the sheep. They're vulnerable to parasites. Last week we talked about how shepherds in England will dip the sheep in the entire vat in order to clean it off. And they're very just defenseless. Sheep don't bite. They don't bark. They're not camouflaged. They stick out in the middle of the pasture. When a predator comes, they don't run away. What do? They all huddle together, you know? So the predator, the fox or whatever, can just take its pick. There's something called a cast sheep. You know, we're told that the shepherd restores my soul. And some people believe that's a picture of maybe a sheep that has a broken leg and maybe the shepherd binds it up. Others believe it's talking about a cast sheep. When their wool gets really thick, they can fall on their side and they literally cannot get back up just because of the thickness of the wool and their inactivity. And so a shepherd has to come and lift that sheep back up. But here's the problem. Because of the blood flow to the legs at this point, if he's been cast for a while, the shepherd will pick it up and stand the sheep up. He'll fall right down. The shepherd has to continue to hold him up. He restores my soul, Psalm 23 says. Now, taking little lambie out of the picture for a minute, let's think about sheep as they'd be understood in a culture like this. And as we just described, when Peter says, be shepherds of the flock of God. Not a very flattering picture, but a very necessary one. And what Peter is saying is that you should shepherd very confidently because sheep need a shepherd. The flock needs to be guided. That's not just you, that's me. All of us need shepherds. Jesus the over-shepherd, and then under-shepherds in the church. The maturity of Ridgefield Baptist Church, our success at advancing the gospel, to some degree is going to rise and fall on elders in a local church, in our church. And again, we're coming right on the heels of fiery trials here. And so I want to be practical with you today. I believe the future health and effectiveness of even our local church is largely going to rest upon lay elders for the years to come. We don't call presumptuously. We move with caution. I could qualify this with all these unstatements. Not unqualified, not ungodly, not uncooperative, not unwilling, not uncalled. We can go on and on. But nevertheless, cultivating a culture of elder development. Some will be raised up and trained through the local church. Others will assimilate. They've been pastors or elders in other churches, Christians in other places, move into the area. You know, a lot of commentators believe that that's what Peter has in mind here. To assimilate shepherds that have been over other flocks into maybe the local churches that Peter's addressing. So number one, we should shepherd confidently. The second thing I want to say is shepherd biblically. Shepherd biblically. Now, we could talk a lot about what is an elder in a local church. I just want to throw out a couple of thoughts. Maybe you've thought about this and maybe you haven't. If this is the first time you've ever had a discussion about leadership in a local church, it can get a little bit confusing because there's so many titles. But let's kind of work through them a little bit together, okay? The very first thing I want to say is this. There are three descriptions for the same office, and this is where it can get tricky. Think about all these terms. Bishop, overseer, pastor, elder. But you know, when you look at those in a New Testament, it's actually describing the same office. It's a different description for the same office, leader in the church. President, commander-in-chief, leader of the free world. Three descriptions for what the president is. And if you look carefully in 1 Peter, and this is only one passage, there are others we can talk about. I want you to notice what Peter says here. He uses all three of these terms, bishop, pastor, and elder, in the same breath. Look at this. I exhort you, elders, as a fellow elder. Now, verse 2, shepherd the flock. That word shepherd is the Greek word for pastor. Shepherds in this passage are what? Pastors. Now, notice the third term, verse 3, exercising oversight. You know what that word exercising oversight is? It's where we get the word episcopal. That's the Greek word. It means bishop. Elsewhere, it's translated bishop. In 1 Timothy, it's translated bishop. Elder, bishop, pastor, all the same person in a local church. They just describe it from a different angle. The elder is the most common title. We don't use that in our church as much today. We call these people pastors. But elder is the most common word. Pastor is literally, I think, only used once or twice in the New Testament this way. Overseer, the word overseer, episkopos here, where we get the word episcopal, is a word that means administrator. It's actually kind of a political term. Think about vision casting in the church. And then pastor, shepherding, which has the idea of caring for sheep. And so, regardless of what description we use, you can call it a bishop, you can call it an elder, you can call it a pastor, it's talking about elders in a local church. The second thing I want to say is this. When we look at the New Testament, the Bible envisions not just one elder in the church, but ideally, there's what we call a plurality, or more, multiple elders in the church. Notice what Peter says, I exhort the elders, see the plural, elders among you. Paul said that elders are worthy of double honor. Appoint elders in every town. James tells us this. Listen carefully. James is talking to the church. He says, call on the elders, plural, of the church, singular. In other words, in a single individual congregation, there's more than one elder. There's more than one pastor in that church. In Acts 20, you see the same thing, where it's the Ephesian congregation, but they have multiple, plural, elders. And so ideally, in a local church, it's not just one guy doing his thing. It's a team of elders, a team of leaders that are leading the church. Now, why would the good shepherd want a plurality of elders, or more than one in a local church? Well, I mean, we could park on this all day. It guards against ego. Some elders have favored different gifts. 1 Peter 5 tells us some are going to favor a teaching gift. Others are going to have an administrative gift. Continuity in the church. You know, if you only have one elder or one pastor, if something happens to that elder or pastor, the church kind of loses its leadership. But if you have a team of elders, things can hold together quite well. It guards against no one person can shepherd the entire congregation. It takes a team of shepherds. Let me also give you one more thought before we move on, and it's this. It's how we do church at Ridgefield Baptist. Have you ever asked the question, how do you guys actually make decisions? How do you do church? We have a form of polity here, or church government, that we call elder-led congregationalism. Okay? That's a big phrase. Elder-led congregationalism. Now, I'll explain that in just a moment so you know what we do at Ridgefield Baptist, but let me say this. Anytime we think about how to do church, we usually read our own experiences into this. If you're from a church or a background where you've seen abuse of power, you're probably going to really push for a democracy in the church. On the other hand, if you come from a church that is an absolute democracy and no decisions are ever made and they're like voting on the toilet paper at the business meeting, you're probably like, can we get past this and can one person just go make this decision? we tend to read our experiences. We also tend to read our own governments into this. If you're from a Western democracy like we are, we're going to assume that a church should be run like a what? A Western democracy. If you're in the East and you have a monarch, you assume the church should be run like a what? Like a monarchy. So we want to step out of our culture and step out of our own experiences for a minute. And you look at the scriptures, what I think we see is elder-led congregationalism. Now, why do I say that? Because when you take all the passages in the New Testament, we have a group of passages that tells elders to make decisions, elders to take the oversight, pastors. Like this one here, shepherd the flock, taking oversight. That's got to mean something, right? That's got to mean that pastors and elders are making decisions. But then we have another group of scriptures where the congregation is making important decisions. Like in Matthew 18 and also 1 Corinthians 5, there's what's called church discipline, where they have to deal with these important spiritual issues in the church. It's not just the pastors or elders, it's the congregation making that decision. And so when you take all the passages in the Bible, some of those tell the elders to lead, some of those tell the congregation to make decisions, and at Richfield Baptist, we want to honor not just one set of those verses, we want to honor both sets. And so in a church like ours, the congregation tends to make big decisions, vote on the yearly budget, things like that, vote people into membership. Changes in the Constitution, the elders won't just swipe the pen and change those, but the day-to-day operations, decision, vision casting, that would come from the elders at Ridgefield Baptist. And so that's called elder-led congregationalism. And let me move on to a third point, getting more to the text. We want to shepherd confidently, we want to shepherd biblically the best we can, and number three, let's shepherd intentionally. Look down at verse 2 with me for a minute. I want to give you two phrases. Let's say shepherd the flock. There are two positive ways to shepherd the flock. Number one, exercising oversight. Hold that into your mind. And look all the way in verse 3, being examples. I want you to notice that Peter tells elders, shepherd from above and then shepherd from within. Those are the two phrases. Those that are in these shepherding communities tell us there are two different ways that shepherds tend to lead flocks. One of those is by climbing all the way up the mountain and looking over the pasture, and you look out for dangers, and you look for another pasture. You might look for the still waters. You are shepherding from above. And then that shepherd might walk down in the middle of the flock and shepherd from within. Kind of make sure that things are going as according to plan from within. I find it interesting that Peter gives both concepts here. Shepherd from above, exercising, right? Exercising oversight, and shepherding from within, where he says, be an example. Now that phrase, exercising oversight, again, that's where we get the English word episcopal. Episkopeo is the Greek word. You probably know more about this word than you think. Skopeo is where we get the English word scope. Think about scope. Epi is a word that means upon or above. In other words, scope it out from above. Look at it from above. And elders in a church are called to do this. They're called not to do all the work, not to micromanage the work, but try to see things as a whole. Try to climb up as high as you can and get the big picture. Now, you that have been in church for a while, you know, I'll be practical with you. You know that church is like an ecosystem. Everything affects everything. You make one change over here, there's a ripple effect that goes over here. A lot of times, and this is good, please come with ideas, but somebody will come and say, why don't we do this program this way? And what the elders will do is we'll go back and try to think how that's going to affect the rest of the ministry. Sometimes, many times, it's a great idea. But there are times somebody might say, we need to do this, and it looks like a really good idea, but if you do that, we're going to lose momentum over here, we need children's program over here, that's going to affect curriculum over here, we can't because something's scheduled over there. Just at a very practical level, Peter says exercise oversight. One of the reasons elders are called to exercise authority in the church and lead the church, this is as I understand it, elder is the only office in the church that sees the whole. It's the only one that sees the whole. we're all concerned about different. If you're in hospitality, you're rightly concerned about hospitality. If you're a teacher, you're concerned about your class, rightly. And the elders are trying to look over the whole to help things move according to the will of God. They also shepherd from within. Shepherd from within. The word example here, this is a great word. You know what the word means? Imprint. Imprint. Tupas. Great word. Imprint. Remember when Thomas says, I will not believe unless I see the print of Jesus' hand? That's the same word Peter uses here for shepherds to be an example in the church. Leave an imprint. And so shepherds lead here, not in a domineering way, but a way where they set the example the best they can. Set the example the best they can. Number four, let me say that elders should shepherd willingly. Willingly. Again, the second verse of our passage tells us that we're supposed to be overseers, but look at the language. Not because you must, but because you are willing. In almost every church situation, unless it's a really big church, but it happens there too, let me tell you what happens, okay? What happens is the church needs elders, okay? Church always, constantly, in need of help, in need of elders. So we look around for people that we think might be called. Faithful people, theological people, kind people, people that are qualified and may have the gift of elder in the church. And we'll go up to them and say, do you feel like maybe joining the team of elders or having that discussion? And sometimes you'll hear a yes. Other times you'll hear something like, I just don't know. I mean, I love the church, but for something's going on in my life or I'm not there, something like that. And then what we do is we give them the extra push, don't we? We say, yeah, but somebody's got to do this. You know, what are you saying? It's all going to fall on us. What's the nominations committee going to do then? And so what we do is we kind of give people, and it's okay to give a little pull. I'm okay with that. We encourage, but it's the real hard, oh, come on. And you almost pull people against their conscience. You know what Peter says? Don't do that with elders. You want to do that a little bit with other positions? Maybe. I don't think it's best, okay? But maybe. But in this one position, because it's essential to the leadership of the church, we want to make sure that elders are doing this willingly, not just because they feel like they must. Think about pulling someone by the hand. Maybe you have your child and you're pulling them up a hill, and we want to make sure people are gifted, qualified, but also want to make sure it's a willing heart involved in ministry. Number five, I think. Elders should shepherd lovingly. Lovingly. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Doing out of love of people, not out of love of money. Nothing wrong with an elder earning a salary. In a church like ours, we have lay elders. They're not paid. They are from the congregation. They are pastors in the church. Remember, pastor, elder, bishop, that's the same person. They are pastors in the church. They're elders. And then we have another elder, that's me, and I happen to be a vocational elder. We are a plurality. It's not that I'm the chairman of the board. It's not that I make all the decisions and really drive my agenda and my will. We make it as a team of elders. Some are lay elders, and in the church you may have vocational elders, pastors that are paid because they're just handling a lot of work. But in the cases where there is pay, it cannot be done out of financial motivation. Now, I'm just going to say this, and I'm not going to expand on this. I have no problem with an industrious pastor that makes a good living. I can assure you that most pastors, they're in it because they love people, not because they love money. A lot can go make money in different places. So we should be good with that. Peter says that pastors that are preaching and teaching and putting all their time into that, they're worthy of double honor. That's probably got compensation involved in there. No problem. Having said that, here's my big BUT. We should all have a serious problem with seeing the super high net worths of the celebrity pastors in our culture. 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, where lots and lots of money is being made and marketed off the church. We don't want to let that disturb us and disrupt us from being responsible in taking care of people, but we ought to be really suspicious of the celebrity pastor culture, which we've created in the United States, where people, it can at least appear, are serving out of love of money instead of serving out of love of people. Last point is this. We need to shepherd humbly. There's a lot about humility in this passage, but you have to actually get a running start to see it. So I'm going to give you a running start. Number one, shepherds, elders ought to be humble. Not domineering, but examples to the flock. In fact, Peter, how humble is this? We're talking about Peter. Catch me. Peter, walk on water, listen to Jesus' parables, Mount Transfiguration, in the Garden of Gethsemane, after the resurrection restored by Jesus, Peter. We're talking about Peter, the apostle. If there's one apostle I want to sit down and have a coffee with and talk with, it's Peter. And Peter looks at this group of elders and says, I, like you, am a fellow elder. How humble is that? This guy has been humbled by the grace of God. The Peter that once said, the prisoner to death, I'll go with Jesus and die, was humbled by his unbelief, restored by Jesus. He even starts this on a note of humility. And then he goes on to talk about the congregation being humbled. He says, I am an elder, a fellow elder. You elders, don't be domineering, but be humble with the congregation. Lead by example. And then he turns in verse 5 and starts to talk about the youth in the congregation. Look what he says. Younger men in the same way. In the same way as who? In the same way the elders are trying to model humility, you young men try to model humility. Now, why does he pick on young men here? Some people believe that these are elders in training. Probably not the case, but it could be. Perhaps in these churches, that's the group that's having the most trouble showing humility, I don't know. But he highlights this group. But then he goes on to talk about everyone. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility one to the other. The word clothe here means to tie a knot around. You ever take an apron and you tie a knot in the front? That's the word Peter uses here. Clothe ourselves with humility. The elders are supposed to be humble. They're supposed to care about people, supposed to love people. Not domineering, but really trying to serve and love the congregation. The young men, also supposed to be humble. All of us are supposed to be clothed with humility. And what Peter is saying is this, humility is the oil of relationships in the church. When you think about how an engine can run without oil, but it doesn't run very well, and there's a lot of rubbing and friction that takes place. But the oil is introduced, and then things seem to just run the way they're supposed to run. Peter says that humility in our relationships, Jesus models that in the incarnation. He models that washing the feet of Jesus. And if we will model that at our church, humility will be the oil in our relationships. Chuck, why is that important? I think it's important because there's a verse that follows. Don't look in your Bible yet. Wait, hang on. There's a verse that follows that I'm guessing 90% of this congregation knows, but maybe we haven't thought about it in the context of humility and what Peter just said. Now, let's look down at it. What does the text say in verse 6? Humble yourselves under God's mighty hand that he may lift you up. Now, look at verse 5. Humility again. What's the humility in verse 6? Now, look at verse 5. What comes before? God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Isn't that powerful? Why is it? And I want to be careful saying this. Why is it that some people seem to experience God's grace in just a remarkable way, and maybe others don't experience it quite the same way? Why is it that a congregation, a church, may experience God's grace in going through a fiery trial in a remarkable way, maybe a congregation doesn't realize it quite the same way? It could be a number of things. I want to be careful again. But Peter says, congregation, humble yourself. Elders, humble yourself. Let that be the oil in the relationship, and you can break this glass ceiling. God opposes the proud of the proud congregation, but he gives grace to the humble. You know why we at Richfield Baptist Church want to humble ourselves, elders before the congregation before the leadership? Is because when we operate like that, we experience God's grace in a deep, profound way. I don't expect to know all the mysteries of how this works. I'm not saying we manipulate God to receive his grace. That would be legalism. But in a very real way, God here, Peter is saying that God gives his grace to the kind of congregation that has humility in those relationships, where humility is the oil of those relationships. And may God bless us as we move forward with his power. How do we do it? We want to shepherd confidently, biblically, intentionally, willingly, lovingly, and I'll say most of all, humbly before each other.